just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. This show was born of a desire to help guide parents to professional resources as they face critical moments with their children. Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and international parental abduction. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help. But which school or treatment program to choose? That's when you need a professional educational consultant. My guest today, Lon Woodbury, is a member of the Independent Educational Consultants Association, the largest association of professional educational consultants in the world. And let's bring him up right now. Okay, I got to move this. Lon, can you hear me? Lon, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Well, good morning, Alan.
Okay, let me bring your volume up just a little bit. Okay, how's that?
Okay, yeah, you're sounding real good.
So tell me, what's the temperature there in Idaho?
Right now in my office it's 9 degrees. It was 2 below this morning. I'm sure looking forward to going down to Texas later this week. It's a little bit warmer weather.
Well, you make me happy to be in California. Now,
you don't know what you're missing, despite your protestation.
Before we ask you some questions, I want to tell the listeners a little bit about you. Lon began working with schools and programs for struggling teens in 1984. He earned his bachelor's and master's degrees from the University of Idaho. Lon provides a nationwide referral service for parents of adolescents with behavioral and emotional problems. And if that doesn't keep him busy enough, Lon publishes the Parent Empower Handbook, which is based on his research into quality schools and programs to empower parents in their efforts of finding the best placement for their child. He also publishes the Woodbury Reports, an educational newsletter for parents, professionals, and schools to provide current information on what is happening in the industry and the public school system. And an impressive piece of information I didn't know till recently, and that is, prior to becoming an educational consultant, Lon worked with the U.S. Senate and the Executive Office of the President on public policy. Now, Lon, will it date you if we ask which president?
That was under Nixon. That was a long time ago.
Yes, it was.
I don't talk about it too much anymore.
Well, I mean, it's still something to be very proud of. You know, I think it's great to tell people that you've done things that hopefully have helped establish policy to make things better for all of our children. Now,
I was on the losing side too much, it seems like.
Well, but at least we've got people in there fighting the good fight. You know, without that, they might just run over all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had a chance. I went over your site a little bit. I checked out a few things, and one of the questions that I had is, what do you mean by parent choice or parent empowerment schools and programs? What's the difference?
Well, the important thing is that the parents are the ones that make the enrollment decision. They find the school, they make the arrangements for payment, they make the decision for enrollment. As opposed to most public programs, it's done by some authority. There's some programs to where the child can't be enrolled unless a doctor or somebody like that refers to them. And all, of course, most of the public programs are based upon jurisdiction. And residential programs for troubled teens, juvenile justice programs, and it's the social worker or somebody like that, or a judge, that makes this enrollment decision, and the parents have very little say. The important thing about it is the dynamics are entirely different in these private programs, because the parents, by taking responsibility for the enrollment, also are involved in the program are very interested in doing a lot of oversight. If the parents aren't happy with what the school does, they have the right to withdraw them, which in a public program, the parents have no rights, and the parent involvement is optional. And again, when the parents are seeing that the bills are paid and the parents have made the enrollment, they can the school has to keep their interests and the family interests in mind. So most of the programs have gotten very extensive parent programs to help the parents learn how to parent better while they're working with the child to get the child learning how to make better decisions. So I think that dynamic of the parent choice is very important, because it works entirely different than the typical public aid program.
Well, and I agree, and it's one of the things that I've seen grow over the years, and I'm very, very happy, is more and more of the programs that are setting up situations where they are working with the parents both during the child stay and after the child stay. Now, what have you seen from that growth as far as the aftercare part?
Well, I've seen the growth on the aftercare. Let me touch on another point in that when I first started in this business and this network and learned about it in 1984, the general assumption was the parents were to blame. And so the philosophy was, give us your child, you screwed up your child, give us your child, we'll fix them and don't bother us. And the growth of this program has gradually evolved to where the child is the number one, the child in the family system are the number one perspective that they're interested in and focused on. And that evolves into a sense of responsibility when a child finishes a program. It didn't work just to turn them loose. So they started working and getting more active. More and more programs are coming up and programs are changing to do some sort of aftercare where there's continued support for the child after they finish the program. That's been a major aspect of the growth, especially in the last few years.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, in your book, you refer to the empowered parent. What does it mean to be an empowered parent today?
Well, if a child gets in trouble with the law and the parents don't have any power, it's the judge, the court system, or the probation officers or what have you that make all the decisions. But what I try to do is give the parents information so that they can head off the child getting in trouble with the law and make those decisions and placement and getting the help for the child. So if the parents have more information, and that's what I try to provide, especially in my website and my publications, then they are empowered to make intelligent decisions. Because I think it used to be back in the 50s especially, a parent would say, I don't know what the kid needs. Here, fix him for us. Mm-hmm. And turn him over to the sheriff or mental health or something like that. But the parents have a lot more power. Just like in the economy in general, parents, people, consumers, are getting more sophisticated. Like you can see that in the health thing. It used to be doctors used to tell the parents or tell the patient what to do. Now the doctor suggests and advises the patient. And it's that kind of empowerment that's going on throughout our society, and it's especially key to our network of schools and programs.
Yeah, and I agree, and kind of to look back 25 years or so, I can recall picking up young people to transport them to programs and there being some sort of a glitch, either the paperwork didn't get done or something, and then I'd be in contact with the parents and they'd say, well, can't you just go ahead and keep them for a week? Why would you want me? I'm the transport agent. They go, well, we certainly don't want them back and we don't know what to do.
That's right. But more and more parents know what to do.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why I'm really glad to have you on, so that some of the parents understand out there that there is an avenue to become more empowered. You know, the ones that are at home, and I speak to a lot of them that are at home, and they go, yeah, I feel helpless. And mm-hmm. I go, well, you know, this is how you can become more empowered. Now, what do you see as the biggest challenge that parents face today with their teens?
Well, it seems like the teens are getting more and more, or a greater percentage of them, are getting out of control or floundering or making bad decisions. And we could have a long discussion on the cultural reasons for that. And we see a lot of that in the media. But the parents are beginning to assert themselves. And could you repeat your question? Because I sort of got off on just side.
Oh, no, it just says, you know, what do you see as the biggest challenge that parents face today with their teens?
Oh, the biggest challenge is, I think, a society that that seems to glorize negative behavior. You look at some of the things, like there's been a lot of criticism about movies and about TV and Hollywood. This is in our culture, and you watch the TVs, the soap operas and things like that, and the kids are seeing that sex without consequences is the reality on the TV screen or the movie screen. There are people that believe that the parents are to blame, and the parents have messed up the kids, and so they will help the kids. I know one parent I worked with a number of years ago was looking for his daughter who'd run away, and she was hiding in a place where he went, and he asked him, and they said, no, we have never seen her. She was hiding at the time, but they were telling her, well, your parents don't know what they're talking about. You have the right to do anything that you please. And if you want to run away and live on the streets, then that's just fine, because you have the right to do that. So parents are getting two things. Kids are getting more powered or being told that they can do whatever they want. If it's drugs, fine. If it's running away and living on their own, fine. And at the same time, parents are being restricted in what they can do. Discipline methods that were very common 20, 30, 40 years ago are no longer allowed or tolerated, and much of that is good, because punishment doesn't seem to work very well, punishment in inflicting pain.
Right.
But parents don't have the extended family like they used to, so parents are required to take on more responsibility. Like my parents, when they got tired, they'd have an aunt or an uncle around, or maybe grandparents, to do some babysitting, give them a break. Well, the families all over the map now, they don't have those kind of resources. They have a segment of the public that is hostile to the parents, believing that the parents are messing up the kids, and then the kids are being told they can do whatever they want. So all of this is making it very difficult for parents to try to get on top of the situation and control their child and raise the child to be productive citizens, responsible and accountable and honest, and all those type of things that most parents want their kids to be.
Well, I think you bring up a great point, and I just read something through my Google Alerts, and I believe it was from Kentucky, but it was a mom that is just incredibly frustrated. Her 16-year-old daughter took off with a 28-year-old man. Now, this was a friend of the family. She had allowed him in the home. He then had sex with her daughter and took her away and kept her away, apparently for a couple of weeks. Law enforcement, according to her, gave no assistance. Essentially, they said she's 16, she went on her own, you know, they left on their own, she was not kidnapped. And I think that's one of the problems that we have is that this whole thing of, well, at 16, you can make your own decisions, it's somehow okay. I mean, from my standpoint, that's still statutory rape. Law enforcement needs to get more involved, and they need to prosecute that 28-year-old for having sex with a 16-year-old girl. And because they don't do it, I think it's becoming more and more prevalent. And as you said, you've got more and more people out there saying, hey, it's okay. You know, you don't have to listen to your parents. You can do whatever you want. Well, that's...
if it feels good, do it.
Right, exactly. And if those people want to raise their family that way, hey, all the power to you. But leave our families alone. You know, leave our kids alone. It's not your place. And there are laws on the books, both at a state level and at federal levels. They're just not being enforced. And that's one of my big frustrations. And again, as an investigator who locates runaways, I run into this a lot, and it's a huge frustration for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's I feel for the parents that get into situations like that, because in a very real sense, there isn't much they can do.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are the biggest changes you've seen since you began your career in regards to the tactics of the parents?
Well, the main change is that the parents are beginning to realize, and this is what's been driving our whole network or industry of private residential parent choice programs, has been the awareness of the parents that they can do something. If their child, if their teenager is making bad decisions, self-destructive decisions, they no longer have to wait for some authority to take care of the problem. They can act themselves and have the right to enroll their child in any school around the country that they feel is right for the child. And the states have generally accepted that. Now, some states, Washington, California, and some other states have interfered with that by allowing a child as low as the age of 13 to make decisions for themselves. And if they want to run away, then that's okay. The parents can't stop them. But that's been a major thing that that's happened. The parents are becoming more assertive of themselves, and this is happening across the society.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
I agree. Like a lot of people, instead of when you have a medical problem or concern, go to the doctor. Now they take responsibility for themselves by diet, exercise, vitamin supplements, to where a supplement business has become a big business, whereas it used to be just sort of a sideline for a few people.
Well, yeah, and I'm hoping that across the world that we can become healthier from that standpoint. In fact, I know that when I had Dr. Art Uline on, he talked a little bit about obesity in America just being at an epidemic proportion in the areas where they're not doing any of those things. So that's a whole nother area. Now, we have some listener questions, and I'm very excited about that because I love the fact that some of you out there are sending in, emailing in, or going to the website and sending in questions ahead of time. So one of the questions we have here for Lon is, it says, I'm a single mother of two, one girl and one boy, ages 11 and 12. Both are starting to become much more defiant than they ever have been. How can I keep from losing control of the household? Wow, there's a big question for you.
Yeah, that's a big question. it sounds like the parents have always needed help. It has to come from within the community rather than extended family like it used to. But the first thing it sounds to me is get to a pastor or a therapist or somebody that has some experience and can advise her in parenting techniques or maybe getting an assessment of just what the problem is. Now, a certain amount of that defiance might be pretty normal.
Right.
It's when they cross the line is when it gets to the extreme that some residential placement is necessary. But she should basically go for some help. If she's a member of some church, go to the pastor. They're oftentimes trained in working with them. Or find a therapist, somebody that they trust. One of the worst things I hear from parents is when they said, well, it didn't make sense, but the therapist told us to do it.
Well, if it didn't make sense, why did you do it?
That's right. Well, they do it because they look to authority. There's a lot of look to authority in this country. Well, authority says something, so we have to do it because I don't know. I've had a lot of parents, I ask them how the kid's doing in school, and they say, well, I don't know. I'm not a teacher. well, the parent really knows, and the parent's the expert on the child. That's one thing a parent needs to remember, is they're the expert, but they could always use some help, and and a pastor or a therapist or somebody can be a great deal of help. Maybe a family coach, that's something that's coming on. A lot of people are starting to do family coaching.
Yeah,
and help learn how to parenting. If they're getting defiant, it might be the mother's not meeting the kid's needs someplace, or somehow there's getting a mass miscommunication going on.
Absolutely, and it says here she's a single parent. I mean, it may be that she just doesn't have time. Unfortunately, with our economy the way that it is, it's very possible that she's having to work two jobs, and she just isn't having the type of supervision she needs to be able to do that.
And they don't have a male authority figure in their lives, and that's all the research is showing that that's really critical, especially, I think, for boys. But for both boys and girls, they need a father.
Yep.
As well as one.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more.
Oh, I know some gals try to hook up with a guy in order to get a male influence on the children, and sometimes that's a disaster if they do the wrong one.
Yes. So, in fact, we've dealt with a lot of situations like this as well, and you brought up a great point when you brought up the thing about comparison. And when the parent says, well, you know, they're very defiant, and you say, well, to what degree? And if you can have the parents make a comparison, because sometimes they'll go, well, you know, I can't get them to, you know, eat their dinner at, you know, at 6:30 when we sit down and do that, or I'm having trouble getting them to do the homework. I go, you know, we're dealing with other kids that the parents are having trouble with them coming home for a week. So,
yeah, there's a big difference.
Yeah, so put it in perspective and be careful that you don't drive them to the point that they then run out. Now you have a bigger problem because now we're having to go out and pick them up off the street. So
sometimes the kids have a point when they get a little rebellious. Sometimes they have a point, and the parent needs to listen to them and work something out. Because the whole thing, as I see child rearing, you start with a baby that's totally helpless, and by the time they reach 18, they're pretty much on their own. And it's a progression. So when they're 11, 12, 13, about the age of puberty, well, they have to have some say in the matter.
Right. And I tell a lot of parents, I go, did you forget how you were at that age?
Mm-hmm. Well, that goes both ways. Sometimes they forget, and sometimes a kid can be totally out of control when dad seems to be, especially dad, says, well, I was just like that, and I turned out fine.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah, and that, it might be that he totally misreads what the kid's doing, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a balance. There's no solution. Being a parent is an art.
And I think you hit it just from the standpoint of don't be embarrassed to get help.
Right, absolutely. You need some help. Parents have always had help. When it used to be, before we got so mobile, it used to be extended family. They would get a lot of help from aunts, uncles, grandparents. But most families don't have that handy anymore. And so they have to go someplace else. Otherwise, they're just trying to tough it up all by themselves, and that'll drive a person crazy. My experience, I raised four kids, and I was a single parent for a few years with three kids, one still in diapers. And I wouldn't wish that single parent experience on anybody. It's tough.
Yeah. Well, along the same lines, we've got another question that came in. It says, how should boundaries change for kids as they get older? And it seems like you were just starting to talk about that, so let's see what else they've got to say.
In my view, there's no hard and fast. It depends upon the kid. It's what the kid can handle responsibly. I think what a parent needs to do is gradually give the kid more responsibility and the ability to fall on their face, make mistakes, and learn from them. But it's gradual. You would give more responsibility to expect more from a 16-year-old than from a 12-year-old as a general rule. But it all depends on the kid. There's some 16-year-olds that are very immature. You almost have to treat them like a 6-year-old.
Yep. Well,
and there's some 6- or 10-year-olds that are mature beyond their years.
Yep. We've also got one that says, if we don't let our 15-year-old daughter do what she wants, we always hear, but Jennifer's mom lets her go. Where do we draw?
Yeah.
And
oh.
It says, and then their question is, where do we draw the line?
Well, listen to your instincts. I think a parent, one of the things is a parent should listen to their instincts. If it doesn't feel right, then it probably isn't, so long as the parents are being reasonable. And when they say all the other kids do it, it's rarely all the other kids. Parents need to talk to other parents and communicate, and most of the parents will appreciate it and be positive about it.
Well, you're right, and in many cases, those kids that are talking to her daughter, they're not telling the truth. I mean, most kids don't, they don't go out there and go, well, actually, I don't have any power at my home, and I have to stay home, and I have to do homework, and I can't go to the mall today or whatever. That's not what they want to talk about. They want to say, hey, when they get out, hey, I get to do it. What's wrong with you? So,
see, there's no difference between that than an average adult puffing their resume a little bit.
There you go.
I think it's very common in humans. That's just a human trait to exaggerate. Yeah, I could see if a kid has a bunch of boundaries and a little bit of freedom, they'll talk about the freedom, and other kids listening to them, if they don't read between the lines, they'll think this kid has all freedom and truly believe that the other kid can do whatever they want, when that's not the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lon, as a professional in this area, how can they get a hold of you if they have questions, I'm not taking calls in, so if they have questions for you that they want to bring up at a later date, or somebody didn't feel comfortable, you know, with a particular question, they didn't email it in, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, they're always free to call my office, and the phone number is area code 208-267-5550. And if it wasn't clear earlier on, I'm in North Idaho, a small town up very close to Canada. They also can contact me through or see some of the information that I have by going to my website, and that's www.strugglingteens.com. So strugglingteens.com. I would have my contact information. We have a last I heard, it was more than 30,000 pages of information with, you know, visit reports in schools and press releases and new perspectives. There's a lot of information there, but also all the contact information is there too, the phone number, the email, and things like that.
All right, and if for those of you driving, if you weren't able to take that down, remember, you're listening to Answers for the Family. That's Answers, the numeral for the family. You can go to answersforthefamily.com. We're here on LA Talk Radio, and you can go to latalkradio.com. You can get a hold of us. We can get messages to Lon, or we can answer them ourselves. Lon, let me get back to another question. I have one here. It says, my teenage son has been caught experimenting with drugs and alcohol. We have grounded him for a month. He says we're being too hard on him. He added, didn't you experiment with drugs when you were my age? So they have two questions. One is, does that seem too harsh? And the second question they have is, do we tell him the truth that we did drugs at his age? Because we did.
Oh, that's the old guilt that the baby boomers have run into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a personal opinion. I would think the way to approach the guilt on the part of the parents is, yes, I did, and I learned how, and I learned that it was not a good thing, and I don't want that to happen to you. Something like that. And so far as the month, well, my first reaction is maybe that's a little harsh, because for a week the lesson will get by, and then it gets so far away from the immediate thing. The important thing in consequences is they be immediate and appropriate. 2 weeks down the road, it's not very, the punishment is not being very, very immediate. So the way my inclination to handle, there's lots of ways you could do it, would be ground them for a week and then see what's happening and see if you're going to continue it or not. Keep it immediate rather than something that was, to a kid 2 weeks ago, was ancient history.
Yes, exactly. I can remember being told that I was going to be grounded for the summer, and I thought, isn't that the rest of my life?
That's right. That's right.
All right. We're going to take a break. We will be right back with Lon Woodbury. Everybody stick around. I'm going to put Lon on hold, and we'll be back in about a minute. Whoops. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
And we're back with Lon Woodbury.
Hi again.
Hey, we've got you. Okay. Lon, tell us a little bit about your book, the Parent Empowerment Handbook.
What it is, it's about 300 pages of information to try to help the parent make a decision if they need to go to the extreme of residential placement. That's one thing I didn't emphasize earlier. A residential placement is sort of a last resort or an extreme. It's not to be, if a kid starts mouthing off or something like that, they shouldn't be taken from the home and put in a residential program. But sometimes things are so bad, the child is on a route of self-destruction, then they need to be placed in a residential program. So what I try to do on that is I do a survey of professional, and these are well-credentialed educational consultants around the country. I give them a list of private parent choice type programs, residential programs that I'm aware of. It's a list of about 650 of them. And I ask them to check off those that they think do a good quality job. So it measures reputation. It's a fairly easy measurement. It measures the reputation among these picky educational consultants. And every program or school that has a consensus, a positive consensus, among the educational consultants goes into the directory. So it's a screening process. Out of the 650 programs, about 180 wound up in the book. So every program in the directory that's listed in the directory has been pre-screened for reputation, and you can be fairly comfortable that for the right kid, it's a good quality program. Now, it also information. Most of those programs we have one page of information: the typical type of kid, when it was incorporated, sex ratio, you know, male, female, or all male, or all female. And some others, a whole page of information about the program. We also, where we have a visit report in that program, we'll put in a visit report. And a visit report is more how it feels in the program when you go there. What do the grounds look like? What do the kids look like? How does it feel? Does it feel safe? Does it feel like a nice place? Do the kids look good, or do they look like zombies, or stuff like that comes up in any visit report. And then there's also a number of essays that myself or my affiliates have written on various aspects of the program. One item in there is the 10 most common mistakes that parents make. And I went through and listed out mistakes that parents make, like...
I was going to say, just what would give us the 10.
Oh, I can't remember all the 10, okay. But one of them that comes to mind is, well, my neighbor sent a kid to program XYZ, and it did pretty good, so I'll send my kid there. Well, that might be the worst possible program for a kid. There's better ways to choose a good match. So another one is that, well, I'll save the money and not hire an educational consultant, do the work myself. Well, when you're talking about a big, major expense, $40,000, $50,000, $80,000 or more to send a kid to a program, it would sure be worthwhile to make sure you make a good match. Another thing is, well, I live in New England, or I live in Los Angeles, or wherever, and I want someplace close to home. Well, what you want, and the most important thing, is to find a good match for your child. And that's what an educational consultant, a good quality professional educational consultant, does. So those are a few of the examples. These are common mistakes parents make, and it's because a parent looks at this, they have no idea. No parent ever anticipates that when their child is born, they're going to have to think about sending them away for some place to get their head screwed back on straight. And so they're not ready for it. And they haven't anticipated that, so they're at a loss. So what happens is they say, well, how can I narrow it down? Well, I'll narrow it down to someplace close to me. Or I'll narrow it down to those programs that friends of mine have sent kids to. I'll narrow it down and do all the research myself, and I'll save a few thousand dollars for an educational consultant, or I'll take the kid there myself. Even if the kid's totally out of control, I'll take the kid there myself and save the money of a transport. These are some of the mistakes parents make, and from experience, we found that they generally are a mistake.
Well,
because the program is a disaster.
Mm-hmm. Here's one you can add that I've run into, and that is the parent that contacts the educational consultant. They get the information and they don't like the information, so they talk to their friends and they find out that their friend sent their child to XYZ program and their child came out great. Not taking into consideration that their child and their neighbor's child might be considerably different children, but they then say, well, you know what, I'm going to go with this other program because they were successful with my neighbor's child and they were less expensive. And the question that I give them is, I go, well, you know, if your child had a brain injury and you took them to a brain surgeon and the brain surgeon said, you need to go to this particular program, it's the best one for the problem that your child has, would you then go and ask your neighbor? you know,
send the kid to a program for behavioral problems.
Right. Exactly. So let me ask. Yeah. Okay, when a parent reads your book, what do you want them to walk away feeling? You know, what should they be feeling and thinking when they walk away?
Well, that they've learned that they've got a list of programs that have been pre-screened for quality, and that they can follow the recommendations and feel comfortable when they talk to any of those programs that the program has a good reputation and is of good quality. Also, I would hope from the essays in the first section of the book is a group of essays that they learn more about some of the things, a little bit of the history of it, a little bit about children and some of the problems, and that they are more knowledgeable about the whole situation that they're in. So I would hope they'd feel like I've been introduced, I've got a good, fair introduction, overall introduction into this network of residential parent choice schools and programs for struggling teens.
Okay, and how can they get a copy of your book?
Two ways. One, it's $50, and one is to just phone my office, and that's the 208-267-5550, or they can get onto my website, thestrugglingteens.com, and go to the store and order it there. Most parents use their credit cards, especially through the store, and just put the information. It's a secure connection, encrypted, and all of that. So anything that they pass on will be as safe as any of the online ordering things.
All right. Well, I know one of the biggest changes now has been the internet. You know, how can the internet help or hurt parents looking for help for their particular struggling teen?
I think the internet has been a boon for parents because they can do a lot more research. They put in struggling teens, troubled teens, what have you. They'll come up with a list of programs or hits and start checking them out. And they can start comparing it. If somebody says, well, why don't you check out school XYZ, they can go to their website and they check it out, see how it looks, and see if it seems to fit with their child and get the contact information. So far as comparison shopping, the internet has been a real boon for parents, and I think has been a major step or major tool in empowering parents. The danger is that anybody and their dog can say anything that they want on there, and they can lie, they can misrepresent. So what you'll also be getting is some programs that sound really good because it's pure marketing, and they're primarily in it for the money. And there are some very, very questionable private programs out there that they don't have good quality people. They have a bad reputation among professionals, and they follow questionable business practices. And parents can get sucked into that. And it sort of blows my mind, there's some sites I've run across where you go to the website and they claim to have umpteen years of experience, but they're anonymous. There's no names or indication of credentials on them. And then they have a form to fill out contact information, and you put in your name, your address, your phone number, and something about your child, and send it in to Lord only knows who. And what happens then is somebody will contact you that might be, they might have sold the name to somebody, to some alleged educational consultant, referral agency is what I refer to them as, or they might be a program that says, we won't charge anything, we'll give you advice. That's because they're paid by the school, and if they're paid by the school, that means they're working for the school rather than for the child or parent, and they'll only refer places that'll pay them a fee. Okay. So those type of things. And then some parents get on there, and I just dealt with a parent here last week that they were looking at a program, they were looking at a school, it was coming pretty highly recommended. They got on the internet, and they found some nasty, nasty comments on some forums about that school, about how they abuse children, and yada, yada, yada. And parents get scared off from doing anything because they hear all these horrendous stories. Some of those stories are spin. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a situation if a child's a druggie and lives a drug life, and they're sent off to a program where they can't have drugs, where They can't contact their druggy friends, and they have to get honest about their drug involvement. And then when if it doesn't succeed, they'll go back home and they can honestly say it was a miserable experience for them. They don't say that it was because their manipulations weren't allowed and they weren't allowed to have any drugs. They just say it was a miserable experience because they were very abusive and they were nasty and they weren't considerate and yada, yada, yada. Well, that scares some parents off. They got to watch out for these expose sites. Well, there's some that try to do a legitimate job, and there's some that are just in it to try to carry out a grudge against the school.
I'm really glad that you brought that up. In fact, I'm aware of one of those situations where a young man who was not happy with the way in which things worked out with his placement, although from what I heard, the parents were quite happy, but he was somewhat of a computer whiz before he went in, and once he got out, he apparently spent a great deal of time and effort trying to hack into the program's computers, to put very slanderous and negative things out over the internet that he was unable to substantiate, and I believe there's now a lawsuit involved. So, and I think, again, you bring up a great point. There's a lot of information out there. It still needs to be checked out, and that's one of the reasons why there are professionals out there that do this for a living. Let me ask one more question that is a listener question. It says, I have a very angry son. He is 14 and already bigger than me. I am a single mother. Sometimes I'm scared in my own home. What can I do?
Well, there's a lot of cases on that. That sounds, if they're scared of their own son, that means things are totally out of control and a tragedy could occur. And that sounds like fairly logical possibility of a placement. Now, she could call the cops, but that oftentimes puts a kid into a situation where they just get punished and criminalized. Being a single mother, there's a good likelihood that she doesn't have much money, and the private programs are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
If she has health insurance, they might carry that. I've found generally if a parent, if they don't have the money, but they have the persistence, they can generally find something that's appropriate and works. There's a couple of foundations that are raising money and are helping scholarship kids. That's a possibility. There are some programs that are pretty good about tapping into state funding, foundation funding, scholarshiping. Maybe they have a big endowment, particularly some of the religious-oriented places.
Lon, is this information also on your website?
I try to put it on this website. It's in there someplace. One of the things on there, that question continually comes up, the one on money, and I have a parent discussion group. There's about 200 parents involved, and that question periodically comes up, and several of the parents always make these kind of suggestions or responses. So, yes, it's on there. You'd have to search for it. I put it into the search box to find it in the articles, but you could also get the response from parents themselves in the parent discussion group. Parent discussion group is highly moderated. We don't allow the people with a negative agenda or mindless criticisms on there. It's designed to be a safe place for parents who need answers from their peers.
All right. Well, before we run out of time, I want to let everybody know who our guests are that are coming up. On our February 2nd show, we have former NFL linebacker Marvin Smith, tackling bigger problems than running backs these days, educational poverty for one. Marvin is now an ordained minister and founder of a very special charter school in North Long Beach. This is a man that has dedicated his life to others, especially helping young people. You can listen to him next week on February 2nd. Coming on February 9th, we're going to have Dr. Chuck Redwine of New Horizons Youth Ministries with campuses in Indiana, Dominican Republic, and Canada. New Horizons has been helping at-risk youth for 35 years. So if you listen on February 9th, we'll talk a little bit about international placement and such as to how that may be the way to help your struggling teen. Now, Lon, before we run out of time, can you give us a couple of great success stories? One of the things, if you've been listening to the show, I try to go out on a positive. So give us a couple of success stories that you're comfortable with sharing. Obviously, we're not sharing people's names, but just the story.
Oh, I've had several. I often get emails from parents that have positive. But one thing, and it's one case that comes to mind. was a girl that was in Spokane, Washington. Her thing was she would run away from home and living off the streets and was hitchhiking around the Northwest. And it was getting totally out of control, so I worked with the father, got her into a wilderness program, a short-term wilderness program, which really changed the attitude and really turned her head around, and was very successful in the short term. Unfortunately, she needed a follow-up residential program, and the parents just no way they could afford it. So they tried to get some counseling, get some help, and get some structure and support at home. After a couple, 3 weeks, she left a note in the pillow that you guys are great, but I just have to do what I have to do, and she ran away again. She was gone for some time, and this all too often happens after a program. Kids haven't quite internalized the lessons. In her case, in about a year, she called her father up from someplace in Oregon and says, "Dad, can I come home? It's just not as much fun as it used to be, try as I might." And so he gave her the money for a bus to come home, and she graduated from college, is currently a mother, married, and is doing very well. And that points out that dip that all too often occurs if there isn't the proper kind of follow-up. Now, in this case, even that short-term 3-4 week program got enough lessons into her that eventually she began to learn what it was about and start applying it. That, in a sense, is sort of the success story that comes to mind, simply because they went through a turmoil after the program for a short period of time. But the program eventually, the things she learned there, eventually won out, and she did very well.
Right, which is great. It sounds it's a real-world success story. In other words,
yes.
we all have some of those big flowery ones, and everything just turned out great, and everything was wonderful, but people need to understand, sometimes it's not going to start out that wonderful, and there's going to be some bumps in the road, but understand there is going to be a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, there's no quick fix, but it's a process and going at it. I wrote an essay on the experience there, because afterwards she was always pleasant to me when I'd see her, and but a little bit standoffish, and I titled it out of Arthur C. Clarke's story, Childhood's End. Her concern about me when I was there is she appreciated what I did and was very friendly, but I had taken away her childhood. She had to grow up, and that's what happens to these kids. They don't grow up. They try to remain childs well into adulthood, and it just doesn't work. And in her case, she was doing totally irresponsible, childish things, and the intervention is what turned it around and got her to say, "Well, I had to grow up." But she sort of missed her childhood anyway.
Well, but I think we also run into kids that have just the opposite problem. You know, they're 13 and they want to act and do everything as if they were grown up, and they're just not ready.
Yeah, they're not ready. They're grown up on the wants, but they're not grown up on the sense of responsibility.
Right. Yeah, they may physically be grown up, but that doesn't necessarily mean that mentally they've achieved what they need to.
Yeah, and even especially emotionally.
Yeah.
That's a kid, I use the term 16 going on 4.
Yes. Okay, well, let me ask one more question before we run out of time. What would you tell parents who say, "My child is really a good kid. His problem with drugs, violence, and disrespect is caused by the kids they hang out with"? Now, that's a question I know that we get, or a statement that we get quite often.
I would turn that around. There's a certain truth to that, but the real problem is something in those friends attracts their child to them. He or she somehow feels compatible with the druggy friends, and so it's a problem in that child. There's a lot of kids that grow up and are around druggies, and they don't pal out with them, don't hang out with them, they don't choose them as friends. But if a child is uncertain of themselves, a little bit depressed, or low self-confidence, or whatever it is, then they'll appeal to those guys the druggies, who will accept anybody. And so it's really not the fault of the other kids. That's just a tool that the child uses to project out their own lack of confidence.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, and it's a great thing to end with, and that is, parents, if you don't provide the family atmosphere that your child needs, somebody else is going to provide it, and it may not necessarily be the one that they need. Lon, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on.
Pretty much, Alan, and that last point was a good one.
Thank you very much. And unfortunately, we are out of time. Again, thank you, everybody that's listening. Tell your friends. This is Answers for the Family. You can reach us at answers4thefamily.com and latalkradio.com. We're out of here.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio. You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You are listening to LA.